go to thecognitiverampage.com. Keep fueling the change, whatever it is that you guys can do to help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support and, of course, your contributions. Love you.
The Cognitive Rampage, a scientific approach to self-discovery, change, and life optimization, is now available on Amazon. What I do in the book is I fuse the latest research from the cognitive, behavioral, social, environmental, and biological sciences. It's not just motivational fluff and wordplay. Now, I do talk about my own story, so there's some kind of inspiration in there, but I'm not just spinning words and hyping you up with motivational fluff. Whether you need a life change, simply enjoy self-exploration and optimization, want to discover new hidden passions, or reduce the life-altering effects of toil, anxiety, depression, all of those issues, this book is for you. This book is not a cookie-cutter method of steps to follow. You'll customize the scientific framework with your own personal beliefs to build your authentic change. That way you assimilate it faster and quicker. It's not just copying my beliefs and telling you step one, step two. These will come from your beliefs as how you extend and build the foundation upon this framework. You'll use this framework throughout your whole life, through every change, and through every age. These are not empty words of motivational spin. This book is an experience. The Cognitive Rampage is based in science and is built from your beliefs. It's a path to help you unleash your desired change. You can apply this method on your own with no harmful side effects.
Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. I know you're taking care of you. I tell you, sometimes I get lost in the reasons I do this podcast. I get caught up in what you're supposed to do if you podcast, or who you're supposed to talk to, or take the suggestions that the great ones, if you will, in front of you tell you you're supposed to do. And frankly, I get lost, I think, sometimes and all that. And I think, and this rampage, this cognitive rampage of mine, has been backed up for a little bit, and it's probably going to get a little long-winded. You never know. You never really know, but there's some topics I'm going to touch on tonight that more than likely are going to punch you right in your cognitive dissonance. And that's really why I started this a long time ago, was to, well, cognitive dissonance, to wake up people to what was happening and what was present and, well, tell it like I saw it, really. Along the way, you get caught up in who you're supposed to interview, right? And get this person on your podcast and shed this news. And we'll come to find out, I've been doing this so damn long now, really just make rotation. And I do respect the guests that are in that rotation, but once you've heard the story, you've heard it, right? And well, maybe if you listen to this podcast once or twice, you've heard it too. But what I'm going to cover tonight, I certainly have not spoke about, at least not publicly on a podcast. I've done a few videos, possibly on Facebook, about it. I'm going to walk through it, and as we go into it, you know, and we talk a lot about taking care of ourselves, right? Our biology, our biomechanics, right? Our brain and all these things, our hair, our skin, our nails, right? Taking care of our physical body itself, and whether you're doing that functionally, or do maybe you eat a certain way. Maybe there's nutrition that you take care of your body with. All these certain things. Maybe a special thing you wash or don't wash your hair with, right? Maybe there's certain vitamins you take that add to better hair, better nails, right? Better skin, all of these things, right? There's a billion-dollar industries to take care of all of these things. And a lot of us do, and some of us don't, for sure. Right? Cleanliness is next to godliness. Well, sometimes I'd say stay a little dirty. Let the bacteria build up on you. It's good for you, right? We're running out of antibiotics anyway. Did a podcast on that back in the day called The Issues. But, you know, we also take care of our eyes and ears, right? Hopefully you're following some Dr. Jack Cruz's work and you're getting your circadian rhythm and trying to get your vitamin D and follow that research, right? You're taking care of your eyes that way. Maybe avoiding blue light the best you can. Maybe you're taking care of your ears, right? You're not turning the music up so loud. Maybe you watch what headphones you wear, right? Somebody makes a loud noise. You, hey, right? We take care of those things in this way. But I want you to look at our sensories in a different perspective. Them two matters. eyes on. Simply scrolling by violence can have an effect. What you watch on television, what types of shows, horror films. See, I used to watch horror films. I was into it like a typical person, right? Looking for that good, scary movie. Dark years of my life, nightmares stuck around for a long time. And frankly, I avoided horror films like the plague because they brought back reoccurring nightmares for me. So I typically try to avoid that stuff these days. And I do get it, right? I'm a wuss, right? You're scared. I'm like, nah, I just still want nightmares again. And I don't want to subject my eyes to those things because I look at my eyes as a, not just what they intake from a sensory perspective, from a light perspective, but also from or a lie perspective or a numbing perspective, whatever I'm watching, whatever I expose myself to. With access to the internet, something I love very much, with access to this, our eyes accidentally gaze upon things we don't mean to. Whether it's those horrible dog videos you don't really ever want to watch, when you're getting injured. People listening to this now go, no, I watch, no problem. Well, that may have some answers to perhaps why your head may hurt or why you have certain thoughts. Our eyes pick up on these things. Are we really aware of what we subject our eyes to? The sensory, the intake, the filter, the frames we begin to build, the narratives in our head about what life is or what life could be. Scientific research and explanations, and we filter those through some sort of chaotic horror film filter, then we may be addicted to conspiracy theory. We may apply those thoughts in some different manner, right? And not even be aware that what we're subjecting our eyes and especially our ears are creating, or the narrative that they're helping, well, reconfirm or concrete, if you will, our beliefs about self, others, and the world, especially. And you may laugh, right? You may say, horror films, harmless, etc. But we know so little about how the mind truly works, where thoughts really come from, how they get implanted there. Scream in video games and violence and watch this. I'm not trying to go that route. Whatever you subject your eyes to goes beyond the biological sensory input influences. It goes into a mental psyche influence, somewhere we're still very novice and very young in research and knowing about. But yet we subject our eyes to anything we thumb by or scroll by. Hell, big jam for a half an hour, or three, and only to realize there has been a terrible accident and everybody's got a rubberneck and turn and look at the trauma. You see, marketing, social media, they know this. The news, they know this. We have an instinctual, evolutionary need. What's harming, what's hurting. And so we watch and we, well, give them the ratings to continue to, well, not give us the news. I can almost hear the gladiator line. Are you not entertained? Can hear the network leaders saying. So do you take as much precaution in what you subject your ears and eyes to and biological influences and changes they make? Perhaps the mental psyche effects that we don't know really happen when you watch a horror film or four of them back to back, or you watch The Asylum or horror, something straight. What that does to dreams, what that does to the thought. Hell, right now we can chalk up depression really to some chemical imbalances, hopefully. And maybe it doesn't. So what are we really doing if we're not aware of whatever our ears even take in, right? What you hear repeatedly, right? That's why people play mantras. That's why they tell people that are going through addiction to say affirmations. That's why even when you meditate many times, when you're beginning is develop a mantra you start with, right? Words, this chanting, a reinforcement. I write about the dialogue, the self-dialogue, the internal dialogue, the importance of the words we choose to create that thought. We have to pay attention to that. And if, well, words are coming in through the sound, well, these, well, turn into words in our own head. And especially if you know the lyrics and you can sing them, right? Pay attention and be aware of that influence. Look at the research for playing music for certain people doing certain activities and how that affects their biology, their thinking, their activity. We have to be aware of these things. They're all influential. We love music, right? That's why it's not a party unless somebody's playing music the way I see it, right? So this is influential. So why wouldn't that have an effect when you're on a road trip during the day? especially when you're making love. It has great influences, right? So be aware. Look at the news anchors, the repetitiveness. Maybe you work in a place and you can't control the televisions that are constantly on, repeating Fox News garbage or CNN twisted shit too. And you just read the ticker and you hear them talking, just going in your ears all day. Your environment, your ears, your eyes, these are your environmental, they're tractor beam. They're sucking that in. They're wanting to pull toward negativity, the things that, well, may be real and may be true and you may need to see or know about. Strong enough, being willing to take an active role in fighting against those forces. Those forces many times can just be information that weigh you down to be negative and go about your business, thinking you can't change anything, calling everything a gravity problem. How much money do you spend taking care of your skin? Your hair? Your teeth? How much money do you spend taking care of your mental? And I don't mean the Thursday night, although that can be good for you too. Well, the other things that may have a reverse bad thing for you, but how are you treating? How are you taking care of? What's your regimen, if you will, for the mental? Wait for a reactive response? Do you say, well, when it gets tough, I then respond and do this? That's what a lot of people like to say, right? Yes, I do, Adam. I have something in place. I take care of my mental. When I feel it getting rough or this happens, I take a walk, I do this thing. Well, that to me is reactive in mental health nature, not proactive, right? Feeding it before it needs to be fed, feeding before starvation, right? Feeding before the hunger pains, right? Part of doing that is paying attention to what our eyes and our ears, skin, the largest organ, cryotherapy, ice baths, saunas, all exposure to our skin, taking care of it in certain ways. Give it the sun it needs. Take care of it. Watch how many lotions and things you put on it, right? Do with your eyes. Watch what you watch. Just because it's there doesn't mean you got to watch it. Some things you see, you can't get back. It's just a video, but imagine it's the 10-year-old. We're influenced by that. So from horror films to pessimistic outlooks on our future as a human race or even yourself, well, loud noises and blue light. It has an influence and an effect. Because part of my philosophy is to remember the environment. I would add a trust me in there. I think when I wrote down my philosophy, I added that part to it after I worked in my first addiction clinic and I came out of that and I added to my life philosophy. Remember, the environment does give back. Trust me. And over the years, we've learned that the environment may actually have a more influential effect on our development than our direct genetics. Although they've found some links genetically to agoraphobia, but I'm going to cover that at the end of the podcast. I had a listener write in. What I'm doing is email in some topics that people are thinking about or experiencing, and I'll either try to find a guest to bring on to talk about it, which we have brought on a lot of guests to talk about anxiety. I'm trying to remember. Barry McDonum is one of them. It's been a great episode. His book, Dare, was a good one. But someone wrote in specifically about agoraphobia. I'm going to talk a little bit about that at the end of the podcast. So, conformity, the line of subjectivity of what should be or supposed to be, what's culturally acceptable. And if you've listened to the podcast, you've heard me numerously use the research that was done with the chimpanzees, the ladder, and the banana. And for those of you that know it, I'm sorry, I got to cover it. But if you hadn't heard it, they put a five or six chimps in a cage with a ladder and bananas on the top. And each time a chimp would go for it, they'd spray them down with a water hose. And they do this a few times where eventually as one went up, the others would pull the other chimp down and beat it up. Well, eventually they didn't have to get any chimp wet. And they would pull one out, put a new one in. The new one would go up and they just beat up the chimp. They didn't know why. They repeated this pattern until now in the cage where chimps that had never been sprayed with water, and anytime someone tried to go up the ladder, they got beat up, and well, none of them ever had been wet. So to keep that in mind as we move forward with the idea of conformity and expectation, that's just what we've always done here, and that's the way we do it. I'll open with a little personal story today that I was in the middle of something, and this something was transpiring when we spoke to someone. I'm keeping it as vague as possible. And this someone asked if kids were in college, and the response was no. And the response that the other person had was if this person had told them their kid had cancer. Response was like, oh, I'm sorry. Together and we move forward. But that response then speaks to the conformity and the supposed to the concrete perceptions that people have and judging something or someone in a moment, right? I don't even think she noticed personally. Come to find out she was a professor, I believe, and we'll leave it at that. But anyway, the response there, the conformity response, and I'll tell you another personal story. See, my neighbor doesn't like me very much. And he doesn't like me, and his wife doesn't like me very much either because, well, I don't necessarily conform to the noise ordinance. And frankly, you may have a loud neighbor and hate me too. Well, frankly, I choose not to conform to the idea that I have to clock or that I necessarily need to change my life due to your choices of your life. And this is the issue that I get. Now, you may sit there and say, I've had loud neighbors and it's rude to be that loud. And frankly, we're not that loud. It's the tiny little speaker system out back. And we may hang out and play some loud music and have a good time. Sometimes we have a little punching bag set up out there and a little gym. Sometimes we're doing that. But either way, the noise, it bothered him. So my thought here is, well, I need to turn this down now because you're trying to sleep. You chose to sleep and have to be up that early because you chose that and I chose to live next to you. I then have to conform the way I live and be different and not play my music at certain times because, well, that's just the way the general public does it. You may be yelling at me now, going, yeah, you turn it down. We're trying to sleep. We have kids. There's elderly, right? I get it. We have this, what you're supposed to do. But here's my issue. Why should I conform the way I choose to live at that moment because of what you believe? You took on a belief, right? We know there is no truth. The truth is only perception. You ride a roller coaster, tell me it wasn't scary. I ride it and I say it was. Who's telling the truth? Your perception of what is supposed to happen is enforced by the environment and the social constructs telling you this is just what courteous people do. This is why we don't go get the bananas. So stay put. That's what I hear. And I go get banana. What happens? What happens if I kept going up the ladder despite being wet? So for me, conformist, if you will, thus labeled negatively in some negative light, because I chose not to fit into the expectation or conform, and thus yet judgment it was passed on myself. See, it's the same thing about the kids in college. Oh, I'm sorry. You didn't follow the norms of the social constructs that we chose to live our entire lives by. And the reason it hurts so much and bothers us so much is because it's a code we've chosen to live by and pass down to our kids, to their kids. I work in the industry. This is the way it's always been. My grandfather was in bed by 10 and the sound was down by then. And his grandfather, because this is enforced. So the response there is the response of, oh, he's getting the bananas. As I went up the ladder, oh, he's going to get them. We don't do that. All right. They're not in college. Oh, I'm sorry. Lady, what the fuck? I appreciate it, though. My condolences. That enforcement. See, I used to use this with cursing, and I'd love to take credit for this one, but this is up to my little demigod, if you will. Dr. Albert Ellis, who, if you look up some of his speeches about anxiety are on YouTube. They're in black and white. It's great. I used to do a good impression of him, but I'd probably get emails, so I'm not going to. Anyway, he would curse during his lectures, and sometimes he'd invite the greatest minds to come sit and listen, psychiatrists, psychologists from around the way. Matter of fact, a mentor of mine, the first mentor, Dr. Jan Burr, shout out to you, man, actually got to work with Dr. Albert Ellis directly. He was one of the people that was called on stage multiple times during his lectures. And I got to work directly under Jan. I learned from him in school and also got to mentor under him in life for a couple years after that. Anyway, so I'm fandom right now over like Albert Ellis. It's weird. Anyway. he would give these lectures, and he was testing his theory, right? It was new what he was talking about. It was kind of a turn, different way of way he was speaking, right? Of talking about the, you know, what we believe our thoughts, right? It's cognitive therapy, right? At the time, it was called rationally motive behavior therapy before he dropped the B to RET. But now, mind you, he was a little heavily focused on just the cognitive influence, but it was new sort of on the mainstream to be talking about changing a belief to change an action, that they're just consequences. Like he used to say that I am not irrational, so I control how I feel. You are thus irrational, and you are the one making yourself feel how you are. And he would explain, and he would drop fuck and son of a bitch as he would talk, and people would come up to him and say, you know, it was great, but I was offended by your cursing. You are only offended by your cursing due to your own belief. If you're offended by that, then change your belief. He would, give them the aha moment that, why should I have to change how I speak? Why don't you curse with me? Because it's making me uncomfortable that you don't talk like I do. And then it's judging and challenging my beliefs. So thus you then choose to be offended by my behaviors, by my action, by my words, by my kids not in school, by my cursing. You choose to be offended by that. Yourself to be offended. Change that belief. But yet I then need to conform. Then I must believe you then, Albert Ellis would call that masturbation, that I must believe you that the roller coaster is not scary and my experience of it must have been faulty, and then I would have to ride it again in order to believe the ride was as you experienced it to be. Say, fuck. Fuck you. Because that's what I hear. When someone tells me to watch my mouth or not to curse, what I hear is, fuck you, change how you believe and adapt to my belief system right now because I'm uncomfortable. That's what I hear. Okay. All right. Well, imagine if I walked into somebody's room or house and just said that to them. Hey, I'm going to need you to paint this wall right now because that color is offensive. And right now because it's against my religion. We take offense to those things. And the reason we become offended, the reason my neighbor hates me when it's loud is because the belief system, I'm challenging how they live their life. You don't go to bed at 10. On Friday? See, they've lived their lives. They're a little older. So they've lived their lives a certain way. They've chosen it a certain way. So when I live against that, I am then the nonconformist antagonist because I have not conformed to the social norm. I'm the bad guy on the block. Because I, by nature, just by behavior, just by them hearing my loud music, what I'm saying to them is, your life is wrong. Your life is wrong. And wait, I'd be out. It'd be a good time having friends over at Friday night. Really, I'm almost fucking 65. I should probably be having a good. Nope. We've been doing this 30 years to do this. They are terrible people. She actually walked out and called me a terrible child. And I thought, wow, we're willing to then cast the stone if our beliefs have been crossed, if someone violates those beliefs. That's right. Listen to this, right? The conformity. And the expectation to conform. And then the judgment passed. Form. Enforcing one's own norm on others based on the choices they made in their lives. Those reinforced through the expectations of conformity. The last little topic I want to talk about, this one is a sensitive one for myself. I don't know, right, huh? Had a friend talk to me on the phone for a while, convincing me that the stepdaughter, Morgan, that I've raised, that I adopted and has my last name in no way, shape, or form could remotely be the same having my own blood daughter. Good friend, right? Under your breath, also say the same thing. You may say, yeah, something's just different. Things that change when you have a child. Unconditional love, something that comes first before you, a sense of urgency, and a necessity to sacrifice one's own things in order to give to something else. Right? I applaud those that find a way to manage those. I feel those same things with Morgan. Filled with hope, worry, anxiety, urgency. Thought of self comes second or third. But yet, because some magical thing of my sperm mixing with someone else's egg and popping out some spiritual thing is just not the same. You see, I laugh because mine's, well, 18. Been around since she was 9. It's funny to look back too, and I see some of my other friends and my brother, and it's cool to watch their daughters and younger than mine, which is kind of neat that, like, I'm the younger brother that gives it. Well, now look, when she turns 14 now, and I get to talk back. But I guess because I choose not to conform my life to a 9-to-5, which I'm going to get to next, sacrifice, if you will, my 80% of my life, Monday through Friday, and time, the most valuable thing that we actually are given, time, and time with those that we love, whether they're blood or not. We sacrifice that because we love them. That sounds rational to me, to that thought. See, if you put somebody in a box, what the human will naturally do will create a life. Create friends. It could be matchsticks or it could be sail buddies. It don't matter. It will create a life. The human being will create something. Stories they tell. Some people say they go insane, right? But inside, if you will, you create another life, another story. We do this. This is a survival mechanism. We create the story for survival, that we are not really locked in a box, not allowed to leave or see the ones we love or have the freedom that we have. So we have to ignore it. A lot of people I knew that were locked up, they don't want you to come see them because it's a reminder of where they're not at. I know my friends did. Friend, they were going to indict me. So they try to disappear, disconnect. So when I look at the 9-to-5, now mind you, the 9-to-5 gets a lot of shit these days, right? You see a lot of these entrepreneurs talking shit about it, and we'll get to that too. What the human would have to do in order to live the 9-to-5 life, essentially rationalize and justify the irrational thought that sacrificing 80% of our time, our most valuable resource, to the job in some way is a martyrism of sacrifice to show the ones we love that we love them. By providing something. Now, I'm, again, leaving out how corrupt the system is, how damaged you are from the beginning, from acquiring debt from college or starting a business, and how wired the game is, and good luck holding on. I'm forgetting all that. We'll add to that later. We're just specifically sticking to the idea of it, the 9-to-5, of working that 9-to-5, right? Some don't have a choice. The kids are out. You got the mortgage. It's what the background is. It's what you do. It's where you wound up, right? And here's what the speakers tell you. Oh, quit that job right now. Go out and follow your dreams and give you inspiration. And it sounds good and it motivates you. And it's good. You need little sips of that shit once in a while, but that shit ain't going to keep you alive, right? It's like fucking trying to hike in snow boots with a Cliff Bar. It's good. You can get a little taste of something, a little inspiration. Okay, I'll quit my job one day. Right, motherfucker, have 4 kids, be on your motherfucking own, and tell somebody about starting a business that takes $100,000. People do it. There's outliers, right? I'm not telling you to question that belief, but my point is, as fast as these people are telling you to walk away from the realities of which you put yourself in financially or even in marriage or kids, what you've already done there is they ask you to walk away and put that at risk, right? I'm with a lot of that. Sometimes it takes that. You got to get kicked when you're close to the edge, right? But I think about the person that doesn't want to create that really and just accepts the 9-to-5 and then shapes the story that says, I am sacrificing the time with the thing I love most, the person, with the person I love most, the family, these people that I sacrifice it all for. I do it all for time with them on Saturday and Sunday. It's 80%, if you will, of your days. You're sacrificing at a place. By the time you come home, you're either, hopefully you're working out. Most of the time you're not. You're just going to bed. You're tired. They're passed out. You're holding them while they sleep on you. You're having pretty thoughts. You're gone in the morning at work. You see them the next time. At home or with them all the time, wishing they could get out for 5 fucking minutes. Both ways, right? But this is the sacrificing, right? This is that turn. So I look at the 9-to-5. What story could we create that we're really in prison in a corrupt system, selling us social constructs, turning us into robots, feeding a machine? Do what you got to do, son. Get a job, get health insurance, pay for the house, get the mortgage. provide. I sipped because that's what that grandfather would have done. That's what we did. Hey, you don't run up the ladder around here. You get a job, put some money away. Hopefully they won't have all your 401k, but you'll be all right. Invest in penny stocks and shut up. That's it. That's what you got to do. Right. So we create the story of I am sacrificing for what I love most to provide what I love most so I can act like I'm spending more time with what I love most, but I lie to myself. This is what I call the modern slavery construction, the paradigm that we create that we then stand on to be almighty on. We stand here to say, I thus am almighty because I have worked myself unhealthy. I am dying 10 years before I should have. I missed 10 years with my kids so I could provide them a Christmas that some social construct said, as long as I provide those bicycles at that time in a house this big, then I will have found myself rewarded. Then our kids grow up unhealthily attached to us and we wonder, what the fuck and what's wrong with our kids? Then you give them prescription drugs. And the fact is, you thought you sacrificed it. And what you did was sacrifice it. You didn't take the time. Now, I respect it. I understand it. But in the health insurance, these are fucking necessary things. Because if we don't have them, you can't provide those things. I fucking get it. So what do we fucking do? Do we go quietly into the night, right? Do you hold that down? I get it. Let's follow what fucking Tony Robbins and all these fucking other motherfuckers that got rich as fuck with investments and made money off of poor souls and continue to create marketing scams in a way to get you to invest in their products, to buy their shit, because somehow you'll get rich if you drink their shit. Let's listen to what they tell you to do. Quit your fucking job. Just envision it. Manifest it. Write a check. Put it on the fucking fridge. Tell yourself you're going to cash it. Quit your fucking job and hope the bank don't take the fucking house, kick you out somehow and take the car in the middle of that shit while your wife fucking divorces you. It. No matter of fact, it'll be okay because we can say we're following my purpose. And that's what they said. It feels like my purpose. So I put the house up for that shit and we lost it 6 fucking months. Follow your dreams and your passions right now, motherfucker. Get competent. Find a way. Make a plan. Issue of motivation and quit your job on inspiration. If it takes that fucking set up a Jerry Maguire fucking incident and do the fucking thing. Do the shit if you have to. Entrepreneur life is not what these motherfuckers crack it up to be. There's a reason they also talk plainly about anxiety. There's also a reason they talk plainly about being affected, about not being connected, about not having time, about not understanding what love means, experiencing psychedelics to find connection. There's reasons. There's no perfect life, as my mother would tell me, that we trade with what we accept, with what we intake, we trade off in life, right? So as we pay attention to that, is that what you do? Because I promise you, as an entrepreneur myself, I will tell you the fucking truth. This is a starving artist lifestyle. But the entrepreneur is this fucking easy ride that nobody's your fucking boss, make your own schedule type of bullshit. Hell, they sell you that on bullshit unaccredited degrees on daytime television, getting you to fucking pay $15,000 in debt for a degree that doesn't mean nothing to teach you what? Other side of the life, the green's not so grass, dog. You can struggle. You'll risk it fucking all. And you know what? You're going to miss more time with the ones you love. You think you're going to walk away from a 9-to-5, start a business if you got a family and spend more time with your kids? Yeah. You're going to lose your fucking mind trying to be with your kids and work from home. Now, some can manage and do it. It's a beautiful thing. You can get organized. You can find ways to do it. If you got resources and money and those around you, get creative. Find a way. See, I don't want to just talk about how fuck it, but I'm pointing out for those of you that go, I get it, Adam. You're right. I can't. All right. This is like that, right? Don't say I can't. You can, but don't entertain that being an entrepreneur somehow is going to get you back your freedom. I promise you, as an entrepreneur, when Friday and Saturday comes, I'm not going, I'm checked out. I don't have to worry about the next book or podcast. On all the time. You don't get to clock the fuck out. So that's why they tell you, do what you're passionate about, and then you won't work a day in your life. Fuck you. Yes, you will. Topic where I bring up a bunch of trendy little fucking sayings people like to say, but it sounds good, and they repeat the shit, but it really doesn't mean anything. That's why you catch me on podcasts sometimes saying, oh, well, it sounds good, doesn't it? It sounds good, right? One of those. Well, look, passion is fleeting, man. About shit. What I was passionate about last month, last week, 2 days ago, man, that changes. If you're a creative, that changes all the time. If I'm just following my passion, I'm going to lose my mind. People are going to think I'm out of control. I'd have 85 projects going at one time. Somebody may do, right? Follow your passion. Now, which one do you pick? What if you got four fucking passions? Which one's my actual purpose? I don't know. What if you try all of your passions that are actually your hobbies and they run out and they all become work, which is what they do? Now you run out of hobbies and passion. So I can't keep listening to these dudes. Just follow my passion, quit. No, get competent, do the research, plan something, organize it, play chess with it. Look at the board before you make the move. Set, if you need to, set up your Jerry Maguire moment. And it feels really good when you actually walk away and you do have something set up. Right. But question that narrative you tell yourself about what you have chosen and what you may tell yourself, well, I do what I got to do. I hear from a lot of grown men I meet and I talk, how is it now? I mean, you got two kids, got this. And hey, man, do what I got to do. You know, I just don't have time to come out anymore or come over, but working a lot. And I spend every time I can with my family. But you got to take care of you too. You got to learn to do that. Remember, the family is only strongest of the weakest link, the one that forgets to take care of themselves the most. Sometimes that's the kid. A lot of times that's the parent. But don't think that your life all of a sudden comes back to you if you just jump over to the entrepreneur world and start this business. I'm just trying to give you some fucking little punch in the cognitive dissonance. If you're laying there at night and you got this great business idea, but you got some kids that depend on you, you got something set up, you've been working on something. Hey, look, risk. If you're talking to me, go for it. Go all in. You know what? Call out the chips, downsize the house, get the family on board, cut some fucking things, get it lined up, make the choice, go for it. I'm all in for it, right? But I'm also speaking for those that feel like they can't, though, that lay there and just feel like they're disabled to a point that they can't. That what you can was rather than dream there about it, right? The toil is what causes it. Sitting there dreaming about what it could be, what it might be, just resting there on all the shit I'm even telling you factually about what is entrepreneurial life versus the slave life of 9 to 5. They call it, right? Look, you're still a slave to your job. If you're an entrepreneur, you are a slave to your business. So easy, entrepreneurs slanging around the 9 to 5ers are some modern slavery because it is a way of shaping and forming. But you know what? When they clock out on Friday, I tell you this, most of them ain't fucking thinking about it. They're having a good time. But on Friday night, I'm at the party wondering what fucking guest I'm going to bring on next week, what book I'm going to write next week, or what I'm going to add to it, or if I'm going to do this or that. That's where my mind is creatively, right? Working all the time, right? Hey, I watch them Saturday night, 9 to 5, and they're partying like they don't give a fuck. And this too may look like fun, but hey, we can judge both sides on however you spin it, right? So if we're starting our own business, or if you do, to ease your mind a little bit, think about the work you put in, because listen, again, passion is fleeting. Passion is something that will push you for a moment. And look, I also would tell you to do something you are passionate about too, but be careful making it a job, because then you will lose the passion, the fun, the hobby. I tried that as a young wannabe adult. I tried everything from DJing to nightclubs, everything I love to be at and do. I end up owning or trying myself, and it all became a fucking job at one point, right? And I was starting to run out of shit I love to do. Shit, because I kept trying it, right? But don't necessarily think what they say about starting a business because of a hobby or something you're passionate about. Think about something, starting something that allows you the free time to maybe then do what you're passionate about, not have to make money doing it. Maybe that's something, another way to think about it, right? But question the narrative that you tell yourself about what you are currently doing. If you're telling yourself that I am the entrepreneur and I am the modern struggler of the starving artist of the entrepreneur, that story you're telling may be the reason you're still a starving entrepreneur. Even that, and why you do that. For and look, if we're here, we're so focused in this society about what you do for a living. Hi, my name is, what do you do? Hi, my name is, and I'm a. This is what we do, and we define it. So if you're the 24-hour worker and the entrepreneur or something, you're somehow elevated on another level. When I would tell you, okay, I'm glad you're having fun. Kudos to you. Do your thing. Now, my thing, I'd rather be in the woods a lot more than that, but that's cool. Live your life, right? Live your job. It's cool. I'm not questioning the narrative. Are you coming home every day really sacrificing your own happiness, sacrificing the time with those you say you love most and the reason you do it? And you're focused on doing that job to provide some sort of financial thing of material to them as you sacrifice what you say means most is time with them. It's worth not just quitting, walking away and saying, fuck it. It's at least going, let me make a plan. Let me get competent. Like I like to say, competence leads confidence. Confidence breeds enthusiasm. The reason you follow a passion to start with, yes, but you can't hold on to it. It's good leading papers, like breadcrumbs. You can follow that passion for a minute as you start to learn more about it, get competent. As you learn to get competent, have experience with it and grow to a confidence, you can be confident that ain't what the fuck you want to do. Or you can be confident that it then fuels what I call enthusiasm. That's why I write in my book, CCE is the principle, right? That's how you can make that way to it, man. But about both sides, I guess, is what I'm saying. You entrepreneurs that live your life and you act like you got it made, maybe you do. Maybe you made it. Maybe somebody invested, right? And maybe you're flaunting about how you do it. Maybe you actually wrote a book on how to do it before you actually fucking had anything. And now you're telling people on how to do it, and you ain't even got it yourself, but you got it off of those that were trying to learn how to do it. There's a ton of them out there, right? Question what you really do it for, but please question the narrative, especially if you're that person that works the 9 to 5. Well, because that's just what we've always done around here. You do got a kid, got married. It's what you do. You work the warehouse, and I've been here, and it provides this, and I'm checking out because, well, I somehow have surrendered my life and what I need and the things I do. Story up that this story is why I do it all, but in the end, you will have sacrificed time. Provided what you thought you did. It's the same with being an entrepreneur. Around the meetings with you or try to blast emails while they're running around the living room. And if you do that, you know exactly how difficult that is too. So the grass ain't greener. So easy. 9 to 5ers and the entrepreneurs. I give it up to 9 to 5ers. You're braver than me. I can't do it. I try for a little while. I walk in, people start, it just doesn't, it's difficult. I mean, some of the trendy settings, right? But you know what you have to learn to do? This year in 2018, that's why it makes sense for 2018 to all this bullshit resolution shit. Say, ready? This was trendy last year. You may have heard this one. Learn to say no. You really get your time back and say no. What the fuck? I've been a movie with Jim Carrey about always saying yes to shit. I'm going to say no to everything. I'm going to just say no. You don't know what the fucking opportunity brings. Maybe it's some bullshit you're working on that you shouldn't be working on. Maybe instead of saying no, you should entertain the shit you're actually doing and not just follow some trendy thing and tell people fucking no. You've made it to the top and people are requesting your company, your advice, and your time, and you tend to say, well, no to them. They may eventually be a larger show, and your book may suck, and you may need to be on their show. I'm not speaking personally or anything. Here's the other one: is what do you live for? What gets you up in the morning? Well, fucking hopefully your own life. Get me up in the morning if you need your coffee or whatever. Okay, I get you. But outside of that, think about what you're really saying. What do you live for? That means I'm living for something or someone else. That initial thought by itself totally disregards yourself. Selfishness either, this fucking twisted word. If you're to live selfishly, somehow you're an asshole. Before I had Morgan in my life, that I didn't have kids and I probably wasn't going to have any, their favorite response to me was, you selfish asshole. And I thought to myself, because of what mythical child? What mythical child is here that I'm being selfish? See, again, it challenges their belief of conformity. We had the kids. We bought into this lifestyle. What do you mean? You don't want kids? Why not? Oh, it must be this. It must be the person you're with. Oh, it must be that. What? It must be what? I'm not like you. Again, I curse if your kid's not in college. All of a sudden, I am a nonconformist that hasn't adapted, and I'm sorry. I just didn't find the right one. Nothing. I just chose not to the beliefs that have engulfed you, obviously. Right? So when you ask someone or tell someone to find what they live for, they're on their dying bed. Okay, look, if they're jumping, if they're standing there, look, say what you fucking need to. Talking to a friend and be like, hey, man, what do you live for? And he's like, well, fucking me, asshole. What do you mean? I got to find something to see. This is what some would refer to as extrinsic motivation versus intrinsic, right? People would say, well, yeah, that's right, Adam. You can lead a horse to water, right? I'm like, have you ever tried to lead a horse to water that doesn't want to go? You ain't getting a fucking one-ton animal to the water, much less making the motherfucker drink. Challenge somebody's beliefs and lead them to the water, you arrogant fuck. I love this one. You're the average of the five friends that you hang out with. Fuck you. Here's why this fucks people up. I'm casting judgment on the people I hang out with. The people I may have grown up with. My business partner. Hell, my wife. Automatically, by going, I'm the average of the five. Well, what five? Hell, Dunbar number says we can remember 150 people. What five do we take? Five of the richest motherfuckers I know, and I ain't the average. Sounds good, though, doesn't it? That's what I said. Always sounds good. Watch what they say to you. Sounds good. You're the average of five people. And then I love this one. It generally follows, especially for the New Year's. I don't know how many fucking memes I saw that said this shit. Cut the dead weight. Motherfucker, what if you're the dead weight? Yeah, see? But I just needed help. Well, they said this meme. This meme said I need to cut the dead weight. A matter of fact, it was sponsored by Tony Robbins. Must be true. I got to cut the dead weight out of my life. Okay, who's the dead weight? And you start looking around for the dead weight. Well, who? I'm the average of what five people I'm hanging out with. What the fucking is your good friend you grew up with? If you cut the dead weight, what happens when your life hits the shit and you're the dead weight? The five friends that you're the average of? Or do you try to replace a lifetime of friendship based on whatever you think some subjective notion of successful is? You fucking assholes. Whoever the fuck said you're the average of your five friends is a fucking asshole. And on your motherfucking asses, you stupid motherfuckers. You hurt people. That's why I say it. I had to say something. When you tell people to find irrational notions like purpose, follow fleeting emotions like passion, you tell them they're the average of their five friends and to cut the dead weight. Man, it's arrogant to act as if you'll never be the dead weight or never need help. Be the lower average of the five people you hang out with or who choose with. Maybe the people you hang out with need you. But now you're cutting the dead weight this year, aren't you? That are holding you back. It's them. It's the dead weight. It's those people. It's this job. I've talked about 100 times, internal and external locus of control. Internal locus of control, people far more subjectively successful. External locus of control. It's not me, it's luck. It's destiny. It's a plan. Currents, the tides of change in other people's choices. God, I love that one. Cut the dead weight. Subjective motherfucker. Then my mother should be cutting my grandmother out of her life at this point. Yeah. See? Oh, no, but not if it's family. Do we have asterisks to these motherfucking sayings and memes and quotes? Cut the dead weight, asterisks, unless it's your grandmother suffering from dementia. Then you obviously just don't run up the ladder. And they leave them abandoned all over nursing homes. I worked in one for a while. These things. Because they got clout. People listen and it sounds good until you dissect what these motherfuckers are really saying. I love it when they follow. After you cut the dead weight, figure out you're the average of whatever five people you subjectively choose at your moment that you think are in your life when they might not actually think they're really in your life, but you're averaging them anyway to make yourself look better. Hang out with people more successful than you. Well, here's why this strategy is fucking irrational and stupid. How is it that people let you hang out with them that are more successful than you stay successful? So if they follow the same rule and they're more successful than you and they're hanging out with you, well, you're dead weight and they should cut you. You're low in their average of five friends. Is the person more successful than you let you hang out with them if they're following that same golden fucking rule? A friend, they need you. that sister or cousin may fucking need you. You may fucking need them one day. And how dare you subjectively look at them and call them dead weight? Now I can hear you. Here's another asterisk. Oh, I'm talking about, you know, those you've really tried to help and they're pulling from you now and they're just steal. Well, when's that subjective line crossed? Maybe you faced that same line one day and somebody didn't think it was a line for you and you're still here. Draw the line in the same. Well, when it's just too much, you know, when the cops have been there and they've done this and stolen, you just draw the line. You draw the line when it's too much, right? Cut the dead weight, you say. Coming up with subjective ideas. I promise you this, if my daughter finds herself sick, she will be fucking handcuffed to me. To work. But she's fucking coming too. And if this job won't let me do that, I'll find a fucking job that'll let me take them with them. I'm not doubting that you're not trying, that it's not hard. I'm not doubting that shit. But it's these sayings. It just fucking heats me up. Find your purpose. Follow the passion. What do you live for? Learn to say no. Friends, hang with people more successful than you. Cut the dead weight. Living. Find your purpose. And I'll wrap it up with this one. Life is about balance. Motherfucker, subjective, sounding good, fucker. Man, no. Life's about balance. Okay. Well, we got a couple meter readers out there that can help you balance biologically. Now, you can stick shit up your nose, walk around with shit in your ears, stick it up your butt, clip it on your finger, wrap it around your wrist, be a walking guinea pig, and be like, my meters are reading it everywhere you're fucking walking. Now, you can do that. Read yourself biologically. But are you filled up spiritually today? How's your mind doing? Well, it's working. It's functioning. Is it thinking bad thoughts? Good thoughts? I don't know. It's good thoughts now. Now bad thought. Well, I'm going to state now that my mind's bad. Or it's good now. Okay, it's changed. Okay. So we're measuring how do we feel?
Day.
What you're asking someone is, well, what are you currently thinking?
I just feel it's wrong. I just feel it's a bad day.
Get the fuck out of here. You're thinking it's a bad day. Maybe something bad happened. 24 hours in a day. Is it bad 23 hours of those days? So life's about balance. Balance to what? Too much of this, too much of that. Now here come the asterisk sayers. Well, you just know, you know, too much of something, you know. You can have too much ice cream, right? And there's a balance there, duh. Work out these many days. You can balance it out. Organize your life and structure and somehow tell yourself you're free. Oh, I'm free. I'm free. Oh, I have to be in bed by 10 o'clock because I got to be at work at 7. I'm free. That's my freedom. Well, I have to meal prep tomorrow because I measure my calories and what my intake is. I'm free. Oh, I got to be at the gym at least by 5 o'clock and back home. Now I'm free. What do I do? Well, the kids are off at work and I got to take my baseball practice. I'm free there. It's Saturday. I'm off. Give me a beer. You see? Life's about balance. Good luck trying to balance your life off the rip when you spend 80% of it working for another motherfucker. Good luck trying to balance your life when you're trying to start a fucking business in this fucking environment by itself and it doesn't consume you 80% of your life, your sleep, your dreams, the shower, when you wake up, and including when you're fucking.
Life's about balance, you know.
Balance in what? The time I got left after I follow all the social constructs they tell me I'm supposed to do in order to live a quality of life they sold me I'm supposed to have. That'll be a wonderful day. Oh, that's right. The pursuit of happiness. Motherfuckers got me. Oh, that sign, motherfucker, too. Damn it. They knew it. But you got the right to pursue happiness, motherfuckers. No, you got the right to have it right now in a moment. Change your belief of what you're pursuing, what you must have until then, you might say. Once I have this, then. When I retire, then. Once the relationship is, then. Once the kids, then. Once I have this and sell that, then. The and then. Now, motherfucker, you don't have to pursue happiness, man. The pursuit of happiness is to push you toward the materialistic gain on some level of judgment and measuring happiness by acquiring. That's where they sell you on the pursuit of happiness. You can pursue that happiness mentally currently. Change the perspective and perception of what you're doing. This perhaps is why you adapted the modern slave vision of sacrificing your life in some sort of martyr-esque to provide those you love a life of some materialistic acquisition, claiming that's who you love most as you sacrifice most of the time with them. That is the power of,
well, just balance everything.
That's what the fuck that means. Now I'm walking around with my life feeling anxious and depressed because somehow I don't feel balanced, and I keep continually subjectively telling myself my life isn't balanced because now I believe it. Now it must be balanced when I do this. And now I have concreted a belief that somehow I can achieve some sort of balance. And you know how I know when it was balanced, Adam? Because my life was good at this point. It was balanced. This happens and I did this. I was doing everything equally balanced. Were you measuring the spiritual effects? Were you measuring the EMF effects? Were you monitoring back then all of those at the same time, consistently thinking it? You measured it, but how much time did you spend measuring it and watching it and not living it? Balance. I can't fucking balance when cancer happens, bitch. Try to fucking hold it back. I can do things to fight it, but if it happens, do. Directly about the next topic, about anxiety and agoraphobia, especially directly agoraphobia. But you can't talk about agoraphobia unless you talk about anxiety, because agoraphobia has an etiology that comes from general anxiety disorders. Agoraphobia, essentially the fear of leaving the house. Mind you, it is one of the most heavily influenced genetic diagnoses. Almost 70-something percent, about 75% of people that are affected by agoraphobia have it in genetics, their mother, their father. It's somewhere in the line. Now, mind you, genetic predisposition, I possibly could agree with when they prove this out. But again, this doesn't guarantee it. This is where people say, oh, it's in the genetics. His grandfather's an alcoholic and his grandfather's an alcoholic. Well, now you've convinced the person you're talking to, they're a fucking must be alcoholic, when it's not so. That predispositions exist, but only given the right environments and experiences will it bring out the predisposition. So you can provide a different environment and the predisposition does not affect that person. Same thing with diabetes and certain intakes of food, nutrition, balancing those things, right? And finding a way that balance to what your baselines are, how they measure and let you function, right? Not some average baseline. So it's effective genetically. Stems from anxiety, from a traumatic experience or exposure. I talked about that early on the podcast, perhaps exposure through the eyes and ears and physical behavior of something that then has manifested to a psychiatric break, if you will, or a fear of leaving one's home or a fear of leaving one's designated safe place. People with agoraphobia create safe zones. Now, mind you, people may laugh at this. I've seen it in movies where they joked about it on like Cafe or something. And it's a seriously debilitating disorder. That's why I joke. I get pissed off when people joke about it. When people joke about bipolar, they say it off the cuff that people are. They don't really understand what they're really saying. That it can, when diagnosed, being very rare, when it is, I think it's 1.7% of Americans are affected. To give you a mind frame, 300 million something people, 350 million people in the United States, 1.7 people are affected by this and growing, mind you, which is, here's my other issue, right? Everything that we develop on treating this diagnosis, especially anxiety, is directly pharmacology. We're treating it all on the front lines of pills and have been for the last 10 years, but yet anxiety disorders have increased in prevalence and also increased in affecting a younger generation on a more broader scale. But yet we continue to fight the growing disorder with the same fucking front lines of pills, and we don't question it, but we have talking points of politics saying we put $300 million in a mental fucking health and we're making changes. This is the fucking issue. So anxiety, exactly, anxiety and agoraphobia are treated up front with these hardcore medication narcotics, anxiety or Xanax being the direct front usually given, right? So this, the direct front, these things do damage on your body over time. It's terrible for your insides, man. You get constipated, you can't take a shit. It messes with you, man. Your liver gets beat the fuck up. God knows what else is fucking with you, right? So the front line, agoraphobia begins with anxiety. Where did the general anxiety disorder develop, right? It's a fear and generally an irrational fear of an outside enforcer influencing or causing harm, pain in some fashion, right? Some people don't go outside. I've seen people that don't go outside because they're afraid of birds. People that don't go outside because they've manifested that fear into other drivers or into a possible person that could, you know, kill them, right? Agoraphobia begins to build up in public places since we've had mass shootings and things happening like that. it causes people. Look, I think twice now when I walk into a movie theater. I sit either near the exit or up high in the corner looking around. I am strapped when I go to these things. I do have a license to carry, and I am looking around. I am doing that. It does affect me. So these are things that affect us, right? So we have to look at agoraphobia as stemming from a deep-seated anxiety, right? And anxiety, many times I will tell you, is a fucking symptom. Anxiety is a symptomatic response. It's diagnosing the symptoms. So be careful when you tell yourself that you have anxiety. You don't tell yourself that, I have or I am cancer. So telling yourself that you are these things is an issue. Watch how you label those things, right? So having anxiety or being affected by anxiety or having an episode with anxiety, when we define those things, it can be framed into it. It can then manifest it to take a stronger hold of our lives than it did. But if you're already there and deeper into the anxiety, remember, these are symptoms. These are things that are affecting you. Remember, we can only diagnose the symptoms mentally that you self-report. We have no general way except maybe looking at your heart rate or testing your pulse, these things during an episode of a panic attack, to call it that. But when you're diagnosed, more than likely you're in a calm state doing self-report. So all we have is patient self-report to diagnose the idea of anxiety or the symptom of anxiety. What's causing that is what needs to be looked at. Is that anxiety based in a fear that's irrational or a rational fear, right? Is afraid of heights a rational fear or irrational fear, right? We could attack it that way, ways of treating that. So you down the psychological mumbo jumbo that I'm supposed to when I'm in therapy with people. This is what I'll tell you directly. The house. You have to take small fucking steps. You cannot allow it to control you. If you allow anxiety to beat you, the first time you decide not to go to dinner, not to go to the place, what generally happens is I can't remember the response, but who cares? I snapped out of that anyway. When the actual anxiety stems from the fear of having a panic attack, when the anxiety is now coming from the fear of it actually happening, when that happens, the first time you stay home, the second time, the third time, the 15th time you stay home, it affects you deeply. It ingrains itself. It entrenches in you. It almost starts to become you. It defines you and controls you. Every single fucking time you just say, I have anxiety disorder, so I just have to be home. Have to would be an irrational determinant word. If you were following with my book and using RSA, you would realize you don't have to be anywhere and you don't need to stay home and you don't have to try either. Get out. You have to not do baby steps if you fucking want to. Get friends to help you. Recruit people. Find those that actually adhere to what you're doing. They don't laugh at you. They find the pain, but they'll motivate you, that they'll see you and work with you in a way. Know that you're out there. Because I promise you, I know when I'm experiencing one of those, the last thing I want to be fucking asked, well, not anymore, now that I'm looking at it way too closely. You see, a lot of people deal with anxiety and agoraphobia. A lot of people will tell you to, well, be present, try mindfulness. And I'm going to tell you, don't you fucking dare try mindfulness. Get the fuck back. Do not do mindfulness practice when you're doing anxiety. If it works for you, fucking great. I'm glad. I told you before, if somersaults work for you, do that. I'm a fan of what works for you. Do that. That's why I think they should open up every avenue of treatment, psychedelics, marijuana, all of it. I don't care what it is. If you're willing to sign up for it, try it, do it. If you're willing to give narcotics over the fucking counter, basically, if you're willing to do that, then fuck, start handing out the mushrooms too. Open it all the fuck up, right? So, gotta get fucking off on a tangent. So as you start to treat it as you're treating it with anxiety, you're treating the Xanax, maybe taking the pills of frontline, what it starts to do is consume you. You start to believe you are this, you become this, you're affected by this. And I urge you, you have to change that and fight against that. Not defining yourself as such. I'm not telling you that you're not experiencing the symptoms that we happen to group together to label as anxiety. You may be experiencing those. I'm not doubting that. But if you begin to accept those and that's what we are, and we passively crawl into ourselves, if we crawl into the diagnosis of what will be because we're afraid of having that moment where when we're out there in public, when we're sitting at the place, when we're out to dinner, wherever it is that makes you crazy. If you don't experience that, go pass the fuck out. Because what I'll tell you this, the body truly can only sustain that panic attack for 20 fucking minutes. That's it. 20 minutes. It can peak out. And for the most part, you're going to come down after that. So tell yourself, go out there, give it your best shot. Tell them, you know what? Give me what you got. I'm fucking out here. Leave the substances alone. For me, Marijuana helps with anxiety at certain points. Don't use it if you don't have to, but if it helps, add it to it. But stay away from alcohol or anything else. Go into those experiences, man. Walk into the places that scare you. Fuck the baby steps to the door, baby steps to the car, baby steps to the driveway. Fuck that shit. You have to fight it. Go through it and go pass the fuck out. If that's what you have to do, pass out, because you'll wake up and go, you know what? It didn't kill me. It was a panic attack and you didn't die. Breathe through it. And then once you realize you can get through it, it becomes easier. Once you get up, you can say, you know what? You got 20 minutes. It's been 35 minutes and I'm still sitting here. That's the best you got. Go at it if you need to define it in some fashion. But don't let it control you or define you. If you allow it, it will manifest as far as to another label that we must then lay upon you to identify symptoms of what's being caused, which is agoraphobia. Afraid to go out of the house is generally where it's related to. It controls you. It will consume you. You have to get out. There's methods you can try of redirection, reframing. So again, that's where I lost my place. That's it. When you're experiencing a panic attack, do not do mindfulness. Mindfulness, this is why. If you're sitting and your heart rate is going fast, if you feel the blood pressure going and then you start sweating from every pore, you get a little nauseated and you're not sure what's really happening, you feel like you're going to fucking pass out, the last thing you want to fucking do is analyze exactly what the fuck is transpiring on you. Mindfulness practice, when you're sitting there having an anxiety attack, guess what? You start to realize, I'm mindfully having a fucking panic attack. My heart's racing. Oh, shit, I'm sweating. I can't get out. Oh, God, they're all watching. Are they going to know I'm going to pass out right here? There it goes. Forget your mental mindfulness bullshit. Future think or past think. Go into those places that make you scared, but be active. Find something small to do. Take a fucking Etch-a-Sketch. Environments. Be in them. Be on the phone. Talk to somebody. Take yourself out of the present. Think about the future. Take a business meeting in the scariest place it is for you to stand. Get in the fucking elevator, on the phone in a business meeting, and see if you fucking crack. Don't worry, the phone will typically go out, so you'll be safe anyway. Face those. The body has a memory. The body has a physiological response. Once the body is used to it and sees it and goes through it, once the eyes, back to the beginning, once the eyes have been subjected to it and the ears and the body has been subjected to it and you have survived it, the physiological response will naturally decrease over time. But if you resign yourself to your bedroom, to your home, and you lock yourself a slave to symptoms, it will overcome and overtake you. You have to get out and let your body work for you. Not just rely on your mind is the only thing. Responses to these places, these things, these moments, even people. There, get in those places and don't be mindful of your present. Do something, make a picture, draw, take pictures in the moment. Around you, maybe. I don't suggest doing that on a plane, it makes it worse. But look forward, be busy, keep the busy mind focused. And then once you've experienced, the body will then work for you. The mind will work for you if you create the proper environment, and will work against you if you create the wrong environment. Trust me, too much on what they tell you the symptoms are, because the only thing that they have is the treatment for the actual symptoms, not the problem. Person, not the symptom. And as people, I don't think we can conform. I think as we conform and sell and enforce others to conform to our beliefs and our lifestyle, then I think, well, we destroy what I think the human experience really is. Concrete the beliefs the social supposed to be into our lives, the more we lose what life really is and the freedom that really comes from it. The more that we listen to what other people tell you, including me, about how it's supposed to be or supposed to be said, well, we lose our own narrative in the story of our own lives. Be aware of the story you tell yourself and the job that you've chosen to live or the life that you've chosen to lead. Examine the narrative and question those narratives, and even question it if you think the story sounds good. Illusion that you've created to avoid the fact you're really in prison. We have to be humble, enthusiastic. We have to be humble and question even what we think to be good. We can actually get competent.